Hey guys, with sports betting season in full force with football here, you need a sports book with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost three decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BETUS.com, and they have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 1-800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. You'll receive 125% sign-up bonus by using bonus code SST125. That's SST125. They have re-up and referral bonuses. Also, BetUS is known among America's favorite sportsbook for lots of reasons. Bet on team and player props, loads of NFL futures, UFC matches, PGA golf, live betting on most sports. The online casino has hundreds of games. The Racebooks has all the horse tracks. They have every bet type imaginable. Follow my lead and get your phone, online, and sports betting partner with integrity and longevity like I did. BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS.
With that, let's talk to our good buddy, Chris Landry, from LandryFootball.com, here with the Texas A&M Scouting Report. Good morning to you, Chris.
Morning, David. How are you?
I'm good, man. I don't know how much you get into the bowl projections and whatnot, but I'm just going to read this text and we can just kind of talk about it real quick. Earlier in the show, we were breaking down the potential best case, worst case scenarios for A&M when it comes to the bowl. And we've had the Florida Bowls as a possibility, Citrus Bowl, and whatnot. Dave in Houston sends in, need to understand how the Florida Bowls are a best case scenario. If Bama beats Georgia in the SEC title game and puts two SEC teams in the playoffs and moves everybody up in that pecking order, would a 9-3 A&M team ranked 12th or 13th not play in a New Year's Six game? And I guess the answer to that would kind of be dependent on what happens above them, right? What happens with Ole Miss still? What happens with some of the other teams that are up there? How do you see that shaking out in a best-case, worst-case scenario?
Well, the best case, I mean, first of all, you've got Mississippi State and Ole Miss playing and going to be playing in the Egg Bowl, and that's going to be a big win for one of those teams. And you've got, obviously, both of them beat A&M, and that, you know, a lot of it, it's going to be, as you know, as kind of the pecking order of who they choose. You look at travel and all that. So I think the A&M's in good shape there. But if you look at both of them, it does depend. It does depend on how both of those teams, for example, finish out. Arkansas as well, although I think they'll lose this week, but who knows. I think all those things factor in. It's not just it's really hard for me to say that, you know, what's the high level mark and what's the low level mark, but I think you're kind of on it. I think it's probably one of the Florida Bowls is, it would be the best guess of the sweet spot of where they're likely going to be, but a lot of believe it or not, 2 weeks left, but a lot of football left that's going to determine. And it's a lot more than about A&M, because I think, you know, A&M takes care of their business. They still gotta wait and see what happens in a what I think is a logjam SEC. But the other thing is, you got nobody in the East. I mean, you got Kentucky in the East. That is going to be a bit of an intrigue, because they're going to go now to a Florida game. They were really hoping to go 11-1, go to a New Year's Six game. So yeah, it's going to get interesting. And I don't have the answer of where it's going to be at this point, because that involves a lot of variables.
Yeah, Kentucky, by the way, also 5-3 there in the mm-hmm. conference. Let's take a look at what happened this past weekend there in Oxford. I was there for that game. It was, from my perspective, Chris, it was a very hard game to gauge, because it started off in a blowout trend. A&M then was the better team in the second half for the most part, until when it counted, and that's when Ole Miss turned it on. How do you assess what went wrong on Saturday night?
Well, first of all, I thought Ole Miss came out and I thought they completely outplayed A&M. And, you know, if it wasn't for A&M's defense in the red zone, this game could have been 20, 24, dare I say even 27-0 instead of 13-0. The red zone defense stepped up big and kept them in the game, as we all know. The biggest thing was that they played, as I thought they might, Ole Miss put numbers in the box. You know, they had the 60 Bs, but they played couple of guys down in the box at linebacker to take away the run game. The real key to this game and where I thought A&M could run the football is I thought they would really do a good job of putting a hat on a hat and getting some movement. Ole Miss outquicked them. Ole Miss did a really good job of being quicker up front and attacking the gaps. It wasn't like, you know, the defense just overpowered A&M, quite the opposite. They outquicked them. They shot gaps. And so the running game never got going because they were penetrating gaps before the run creases could be created. If A&M can't run the football, they're not going to be a very efficient offense this year. Okay, this is not a team that can throw it when they have to throw it. They have to take advantage of using the running game to build into the pass game, meaning you've got to overplay the run, and that gives them some opportunities. I thought that there were some opportunities in the pass game on the underneath routes that A&M didn't do a very good job. They either, in some cases, didn't recognize it quick enough with their corners dropping off. They were, again, a drop or two, and then there was just a couple of misrun routes and coverage recognition miscues. Look, you've got to have some success in the passing game. You got to be balanced enough, and this team's not really balanced. You know, outside of, you know, the Alabama game, which, again, I think people tend to take a one-game snapshot and say, there, they figured it all out. That's the way it's going to be. Well, it's not the way it is. One game doesn't make a season. It doesn't carry over. It's maybe a sign that things might be getting better, but you don't know. And I think in terms of, you know, one of the things that they did well in that game is they dictated the flow with their run, and they never could do it. Second half, they did a really good job. I thought Ole Miss, with a little bit of a lead, backed off a little bit defensively and played a little bit more coverage. Like, they didn't want to give up a deep ball. So I thought it created some run creases for A&M, and that's when you start to see the offense start to have some success. You know, some outside zones, the outside zone was working a little bit more because they were concentrated. Ole Miss was concentrated on getting through the A and B gaps very aggressively. So that's why the inside run just never had any level of consistency. It only was when they were able to trap a guy and get a guy loose, but the outside zone had some success, and then they worked the middle of the field a little bit, had a couple of plays in the passing game, but not enough. And look, I kept looking at it saying, and watching it, man, this defense of A&M, I mean, you can't ask for anything more. They gave up a ton of yards. There's no question. Now, they did play the giving up yards was a lot of too deep coverage, a lot of split safety looks. Ole Miss was able to move the football. You have to give up something, which you don't want to give up if you're A&M. If you're a team like A&M, is you don't want to give up the big chunk play. You know, and you want to rely on the fact that, look, they're going to make yards, but we have to rally, break on the ball, tackle well. And they just, as I said, came up big in the red zone. So they held them to 13-0. I mean, you kidding me? Like I said, it felt like 24-0. And it was like, you know, okay, 13-0 is not insurmountable. 24-27-0 is with this offense. So I thought they did a lot of good things to give themselves a chance. The whole yards, giving up a bunch of yards, wasn't that big of an issue in, if you understand what they were trying to do. I'm not saying they were happy they were giving up yards, but it was in lieu of giving up the big quick score, which could have really been devastating. Because in the short field in the red zone, you don't have to worry about the big play as much. So you can be a little bit more aggressive. So the underneath stuff doesn't work as much because you've got a compressed field. So I thought they had a good game plan defensively overall to execute what they needed to do and gave their offense a chance. I think they did a really poor job. I thought Jimbo was a little bit behind in trying to, and the whole understanding, the whole protection schemes and what could work and what they were doing. I mean, I think it must have recognized what they were doing, but I don't think they did a really good job of play sequences that could have maybe given them a little bit of a chance. Look, at times it looked like it was really close, right? But yet you against an Auburn, you're going to have a chance to win a game like that because they're not an explosive offense. You play it close. it's a, you know, 17, 20 points going to win it type of game. You make a play on defense, you know, boom, you can win it. But against an Ole Miss type of team, and I would say like in a bowl game, whoever they match up against, if you've got a team that's got a really good offense, you know, you're going to have to find a way to be balanced enough. So it's going to be interesting to see the rest of the way. But that's how I saw it. That's the issue. And, you know, that's something that they've got to work on this year and beyond. And some of the things are – there are a lot of pieces to unravel to kind of say, well, what needs to be done. But everything from protection, recognition, you know, play sequencing, how to attack with the running game versus a very quick team up front. And obviously quarterback development is going to have to be a big part of it.
Chris, one of the things that I found interesting is, yes, I think the defense obviously played very well in the red zone and limiting to that first half 15-0. But the big runs that Ole Miss was able to carve up, and it seemed like their backs would get lost and then bust out. And then there wasn't really good tackling at times to allow for 6-7 extra yards.
Yes, and a lot of it was certainly not designing to miss tackles, but you had less numbers in there in run defense. So they do a really good job of kind of picking off defensive linemen and kind of working away, work the flow one way, and they did a really good job of that. And I think that was, again, you know, the design was to not allow the big play. So you had safeties that are, and they were reading the safeties deep, so they attacked with the running game. Now, the answer is you got to play better at the second level, but you normally what you would do is be a little bit more aggressive with having guys on the second level to help with the run. But the theory being, you know, not to give off that many explosive runs. You don't want that. But they were really good, again, on a short field, handling that. So it was a byproduct of not enough numbers in those situations that you're referring to, not enough numbers and really poor angles. Those are the two things that were really key. So it wasn't a great defensive performance in terms of shutting out yards or shutting out plays, but it was a defense that's kind of built around giving up explosive plays. And it's kind of like, you know, working with Belichick, you know, for example, a lot of what he does, I think a lot of defenses today, when people talk about defenses, they're not concerned about yards as much as they're concerned about being able to get off the field on third down and in the red zone. And you don't want to lose the time of possession battle where you get worn down. But certainly the missed tackles were definitely a valid point. But that's what I saw as the why.
Methodology on a week where you're taking on an inferior opponent, you still got LSU looming. What do you think typically a team does in this situation when it comes to how they attack their game plan, the type of plays we're going to see from some of the stars? How does that typically work itself out?
Well, here's what I always did on those situations. I call it play through an opponent. And what that simply means is, first of all, there's a lot off of this game for A&M to work on themselves. Okay, get better at, don't waste a week of practice, don't waste a game against an inferior opponent and miss a chance to get better. Okay, don't look at it as, well, they won or lost. You got to get better in there, improve in some of those key areas, some of which we've talked about. But one of the things you can do is implement some of the LSU stuff without introducing it as LSU stuff. So a coverage, a front, a formation that you have to go against defensively, that it may not be as much as what, you know, Purview will do, but it will be some things. That way you get a little extra week of practice. You don't want to come in with the attitude of, hey, look, we don't give a bleep about this team, so we're going to put in the game plan this week against LSU one. It really sends a message internally that we don't have to work as hard, and then you get sloppy and you develop bad habits, and all of a sudden you got a sloppy win that you didn't get much out of. Two, you get stale, believe it or not. If you start practicing against an opponent and you go 2 weeks, it's better to kind of work against things to kind of get a feel for getting better against this look. And I like to say, work on yourself. You're struggling against, you know, with this protection, work on it a little bit more in practice. You're struggling, you know, against this look. That's what I try to do in an opponent like this. Don't waste an opportunity. You can play some young guys. Everybody focuses on that. Yeah, that's great. But challenge your guys to say, you want to get a little time off? Starters, you dominate the first quarter. You dominate into the second quarter, and then you get some time off. Otherwise, your rim's going to be on the field, and we're going to have to get you better in the second half, and we don't want to do that. We want to get other guys a look. We want to give you a rest.
Chris, last thing for you. Got about a minute left. Just compare LSU to somebody A&M has played this year, because I see a team that has played teams real tight, has still a lot of talent, but they haven't been winning games. Playing at Death Valley, always tough. Maybe a chance for a bowl game for them. Who does LSU remind you of in regards to who A&M has played?
Not like anybody that they've played. It's completely different. The offense is not very good, so A&M will be in good shape in that. Defensively, they'll be able to control this game. We'll talk about it next week, but just a quick look. They'll be able to control, should be able to control LSU's offense. That's not very good. Now, the defense is playing pretty well. They're playing a lot of young guys, and they are very talented. So it'll be a challenge. So the one thing I would say is, you know, aggressive, athletic, a little bit bigger, but athletic, maybe a little bit like Ole Miss's defense, but nowhere near the type of offense. So it could be a cross between an Ole Miss and an Auburn in that they're not like either one. LSU is not like either one. But in terms of what A&M has to do, that's stylistically what they're going to be facing. Can control the game defensively and probably get enough field position for the offense to have success. LSU will play hard, but, you know, they are playing hard. Give them a lot of credit. It's the last game for Ed Orgeron. And you're right, it may mean a bowl game. I don't even know how many of those players really want to go in a bowl game. So I don't know if that's going to be as big a motivation as people might think.
Appreciate you, Chris. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Take care. All right, Chris Landry there, the Texas A&M Scouting Report here on Texas Ags Radio, presented by David Gardner's Jewelers.